Let's start here on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph with the new Perek. The Mishnah says, "Kol ha'yad ha'marbe livdok." The more that a person checks, binashim mishubechet. With regards to women, that is beneficial or praiseworthy. Uba'anashim, when it comes to men, tikatzetz, should be cut off. So Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, ma'ishna nashim or ma'ishna anashim? What's the difference between men and women with regards to checking? So Gemara says, nashim lav b'not hargashanin hu. Women who do not get stimulated, therefore mishubachot, therefore we encourage them to check more. Anashim dimnei hargashanin hu. Men who do get stimulated by contact, therefore we do not encourage them to check more often, and say tikatzetz, they should be cut off. That was for Bala. This is for Tarut. So here, you have to explain that the Mishnah is speaking about a case of Bodega Tamid for Tarot. Rashi over here does mention, Shmitokach lo atili de safek tuma. She doesn't come to safek tuma, Bala lo atili de isura. And her husband doesn't end up in isur. But I think the husband aspect is a derivative of the Tarot aspect that she checks in order that there is no problem. Where it says, Ihochi mayuria marbe. Then why does the Mishnah use the modifier marbe? Whoever does this a lot. So by women, we understand, if you do it a lot, it's praiseworthy. By men, if you do it a lot, it's problematic. From what you're explaining now, even if you don't do it a lot, it's problematic. Kilo marbe nami, kigdani marbe anashim tano. The aleph is the preposition, and then nashim, it's the marbe is modifying just the women in the Mishnah, not the men. So it's praiseworthy the women who check frequently, but a man does not check at all. That is only truly in shichvat zera. We're trying to determine if they're tamei tumat shichvat zera. Then we discourage the checking. About the inyan zov, but when it comes to zov, then avu mishubach kenashim, so that it's praiseworthy just like the women. And that's because over here we have to determine what type of zav he is. The number of sightings will determine whether he is a zav of shtei riyot, zav of shalosh riyot, whether he needs to bring a korban, not bring a korban. There's information that's very important for us to ascertain over here. Va'afilu l'inyan shichvat zera. In terms of checking for shichvat zera, which is tumat erev, over there, even there, we have the ability to do checking. In balivdok, he does it bitzror o becheres. He uses a pebble, or he uses some sort of clay or earthenware. Then you're allowed to do it because they are rough, and they do not have a stimulative effect. Ubematlit, lo. But to use a cloth, that we do not allow. Vatanya, don't we have a braita that says, bodek atzmo bematlit, that you are allowed to check with a cloth? Uvechol davar shirutze, or anything else that he wants? Kedamara baye, baye qualifies that braita and says, bematlit ava. They were talking about a thick cloth, again, that has a rougher texture to it, and therefore it's not stimulative in nature. Achanami, so tovir bematlit ava. Behechi, dhar de baye. Where's the core statement of Abai? We're saying over here that this braita means matlitava because the word Abai says somewhere else. Where is that somewhere else that Abai speaks? Tatanan, we have a Mishnah, Yochel b'truma. Person was consuming truma, eating truma, virgish shenizdazu everav. He feels like his body becoming tense. Ochez v'amato ubuleya truma. So he holds on to his amaz member, and then he swallows the truma. So what we're trying to do is prevent the shikvan zera from exiting his body. Person is not tamei tuma shikvan zera until it exits the body. So here he has the sensation that he's going to have some sort of emission, seminal emission. In order to complete swallowing the truma before he becomes tamei, we tell him to hold on to his aver in order to prevent the shikvan zera from exiting. It says, Ocheiz? How could you do that? V'atanya. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, kol Ocheiz ba'amato, anyone he holds his Eiver, umashtin, and urinates, ilu mevi mabul li'olam, as if he brings a flood to the world. Rashi notes that that's one of the sins of the Dor HaMabul, ki hishchid kol basar darko al aretz. The idea of hashchatat zera is read into the problems that were by the Dor HaMabul. And so that person who does such a thing is me baby bodilam. So my answers bamatlitava that he can hold on with a thick cloth. So again over there, the idea being that he can stop the shikhvat zera by doing this and will not be stimulative in effect because he's using a matlitava. And just like a baye qualifies over there the braita about the Mishnah about Truma, he so too qualifies the braita that we brought over here about Bodek atzmo but matlit. That a person can check himself with a cloth. Rav Amar afilu tamer batlit raka. Can even use a thin cloth. Came into akar. Akar. Exactly what you were suggesting. Once he already has the sensation of having a seminal emission, there's nothing more to talk about. It's already done. What's done is done. And he's not going to change the fact now or create a bigger problem. Vayi is afraid that it'll increase the amount of the emission or the number of emissions. Rava lo chayish duma atele sufe. Rava doesn't worry about this aspect of adding on or multiple emissions. Is that really true? Velo? Vatanya. What's this like? Notain etzba ba'ayin. The person coming into contact with their eiver, it's like putting a finger into an eye. Because once you etzba ba'ayin, ayin midamat. As long as the finger's in the eye tears. And it continues to tear. I mean that the problem is continuous until one removes the finger from the eye. So the same thing would be suggested here. As long as you're in contact with the aver, that could cause more problems. So Rava says, he says, just from a practical standpoint, if a person gets stimulated and has an emission, the likelihood of a subsequent emission in a very short period of time is not common. So what you're talking about here, that breita is talking about, first of all, if they've yet to have the emission, they're only in the process of stimulation, or there's a small amount of emission. But if one person has this dazei varav, person has a full-fledged emission, then to have a repeat occurrence of that, or to have a stimulative effect after that, Rava says is very unlikely. And because of that, he says, I'm not going to worry about it. You're right. In a situation, or what the breita is speaking about, is where a person is having either, they have a small emissions, or they're talking about the stimulative effect over there, you're right. That has continuous effect, and therefore we would discourage you from continuing to be in contact. But over here, where you have a complete emission, then we're not going to say to you, don't hold on, because maybe it'll cause more. The damage is done, and therefore you're not going to increase the damage by holding on. It's interesting to note over here, Tosafot mentions the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam is that Nashim are not commanded in Piriyah v'Ribyah. It's Mechloket Rishonim, whether women are part of the Mitzvah of Piriyah or Ribyah or not. Minchat Chinuch brings a large piece on that. So the Rabbeinu Tam believes that they're not commanded in Piriyah or Ribyah. So based on that, Tosafot says that the Gemara's reasoning is not so accurate. Because we said before that the distinction between men and women is whether touching has a stimulative effect. So the Gemara distinguishes between a man where it has a stimulative effect and a woman where it does not have a stimulative effect. But Tosafot points out, if they're not commanded on Piriyah, even if it did have a stimulative effect, it would be irrelevant. And so he says, what the Gemara is really saying is, afilu havu mir gemar gishot. Even if they did have a stimulative effect, it wouldn't matter. By women, it's just irrelevant. Because they're not commanded in Piriya or Rivya. So just interesting note, according to those that say that there is no din of Piriya or Rivya, but women, they have to write that the Gemara is the lav davka, that they are not Benot HaGashot. Even if they were Benot HaGashot, it would have no impact over here. We know that today. In their day, there was a belief that their ovulation was some form of Zera. Because that's the Gemara says that if the man's zera comes first, then it's a female. If the woman's zera comes first, then it's a male. They had some belief that there was a quote-unquote zera of the isha that was internal. Rabbi Lezer, miracle ches v'ama u'mashtin. Anyone who holds on to their ever and then urinates, kilu mevim avodu elam. Amr lo the Rabbi Lezer. The chamim objected and said, hello, nitzotzot nitazin al raglav. Person urinates, and then as they're urinating, what's going to happen is some of the urine will splash on their feet. And then he will look like someone who does not have full capacity to procreate because he has something wrong with his aver. And he's going to cause aspersions to be cast on his children, that they were born of another man. Because the underlying assumption of the Gemara is if a person cannot urinate in an ark, in a full-fledged ark, then that's an indication that they do not have the ability to impregnate, to seminate a woman. And so because of that, there was a belief in that day that if one had drops of urine that were found on their feet, that was indicative of their inability to create an ark when they urinated. And because of that, it would cause rumors or cast aspersions on their children that if this individual cannot procreate or impregnate a woman, then it must have been another man that did it, and the children must be mamzerim. So Amalei Mutav, Shiyotzi Lazal Banav, Shein Mamzerim, better to allow these rumors to be generated, Vayaseh Etzmo Rasha Sha'achat Lifnei HaMakom. And he should not act improperly before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even for 1 minute or 1 hour. That we give precedence to not, quote-unquote, sinning over here, than we do to the possibility of rumors being generated. Tani Yidach, have another bright. Amalei Rabbi Eliezer LeChachamim, Efshar Yamod Adam BeMakom Gavoah V'Yashtin. Yashtin Bafar Tichoach. There's an easy solution to this problem. Person should just urinate off a higher location, so therefore they won't have this problem, or they'll urinate into soft earth, which will not allow for the urine to splash onto his feet. Better to make these, or take up these options, than to make do something that would be improper. So hi, Amar Lohu Bereisha. Which of these two conversations took place first? Ilay Mekamayit Amar Lohu Bereisha. If he said the first braita that we brought before, that was the first conversation they had. Bata Amar Lohu Yisura. After he tells them that, irrespective of what's going to happen here, it's Asur. Then Hamar Amar Lohu Takanta. Then he gave them a solution to the problem. Ella Hamar Lohu Bereisha. Must be that he's saying this braita first, meaning the second braita first. Barmalei Enlo Makom Gvoa Vachar Tichuach Mai. So he gave a solution. He says, listen, Rabbanan, you don't need to worry about this. You can have a way to solve the problem, which is either to urinate from a high place or on soft earth, and you won't have the problem. The Chachamim retort and say, what happens if he's not found in those situations? Then what should he do? Mai, what's the din there? I'm a lehu. Then he brings the second braita, which was really our first braita, and says to them, I'm a lehu, mutav shiyotzil azal banav, yaseh atzmo rasha shachad lifnei hamakom. In that situation, we look for solutions. If there is no solutions, better to not enter into this problem, to be ochez ba'ma, to hold on in order to urinate, and allow for these rumors to be generated. B'chol kach lamo, and why so much? Pnei shemotzi shechvat zera levatala. It could cause an emission, a semen omission that was unnecessary, which we're going to see now is very discouraged. Dam Rabbi Yochanan. Person who has such a seminal omission that's unnecessary, then they are chayav mita. They're worthy of death. Shneamar, because it says about the sons of Yehuda, vayira beinei Hashem et asher asah vayamet gamoto. It was evil in Hashem's eyes what he did. Vayamet gamoto, and he killed him as well. This is by Erev Onan. And when Rezer says kilo yelo azara, that he thinks that he's not going to have a zera, then tishchit ala aretz. He allowed his seed to be spilled on the ground. So Rabbi Yochanan associates that with shechlat zera levatala, and therefore it says that Hashem killed him. Hashem killed him, that means you're deserving a mitah. Yitzchak Rabbi Yami Amrei ki'ilu shofech damim. It's as if you are a murderer. Shenemar, hanechamim ba'ilim. Those that are burning with lust. Tachad kol etz ranan, under the trees. Shochatei hayiladim banichalim, those that shecht, kill the children in the riverbeds, tachat sipei haslaim, under the cliffs of the rock. Al tikri shochatei, don't say the shechting, those that murder children. Elas sochatei, sochet means to squeeze out, the melacha and shabbat of sochet means to squeeze a liquid out. Obviously they're referencing over here the spilling of semen unnecessarily, shechvat zera levatala. On that, the Torah has a very negative view. Hashem over there says that these people are shochatei yiladim. They are murderers. So what you see from these two statements is that the shechvat zera is a potential to impregnate a woman, a potential of having a child. And therefore, when someone who spills the shechvat zera unnecessarily is like a murderer or deserving of death, both of those connected to the fact that you're taking what could have produced life and wasting it. Then there's one more. Sirv Asi Amar Kilo Reid Uvedat Kuchavim. It's if we worship idols. Ketiv Ocha says in the Pasuk that we just quoted from Yishayah, Tachad Kol Eitz Ra'anan Uchtiv Hatam. It says in Dvarim, Alaherim Aramim Vetachad Kol Eitz Ra'anan. They're going to worship Avodah Zarah on every high mountain and under every tree. So Tachad Kol Eitz Ra'anan, Tachad Kol Eitz Ra'anan is a quote-unquote Gzeres Shava. It says that if you're going to learn that pasuk referring to shechvat zera levatala, it will also connect in the isur of avodah zera. Rav Yehuda Ushmuel Habakaimia Igra de Beit Knishto. Rav Yehuda and Shmuel were standing on a roof of a Beit Knesset. Rav Yehuda being a Talmud of Shmuel, he was originally a Talmud of Rav and later a Talmud of Shmuel. The Shaf Biyotiv Vinardo. Right, to Rashi, this is a location within Narada, a region, a county within the larger city of Narada. Rashi in other places says that the Shaf Biyotiv has to do with the presence of the Shekhinah moving from Yerushalayim to Bavel, and not necessarily about the particular name of the location, but rather a description of why this was so, is because the Shekhinah moved them from Yerushalayim to Bavel and resided in this Beit Knesset. So Amalei Rav Yehuda Lishmuel Tzarich Ani Lashtin. He says, I need to urinate. But he's on the roof of the Beit Knesset, and it would seem to be inappropriate to urinate on the roof of the Beit Knesset. So Amalei Shinina says to Shinina, which was the nickname that was given to Rav Yehuda. He was called many times Rav Yehuda Shinina. One of two reasons, Shinina meaning the sharp one, that he was very bright, sharp, or the other one, Shinina, is that he had large teeth, and that was the nickname or description of him. Chozbam amatcha, grab a hold of your aver, vashtein lechutz, and urinate outside of the building, and ensure that you urinate past the roof over here, but hold on to your aver in order to facilitate that. Hevel hechi avid hachi, how could he do such a thing? V'atanya, we're going to quote the Braita that we just had, Rabbi Lesher's opinion. Anyone who grabs a hold of their aver in order to urinate brings them abu le'olam. You made it like an army that came in, an invading army. An army that comes into a city. If they come in a time of peace, chaviot tuchot asurot. Any barrels of wine that are open are asur. Stumot, anything that remains sealed is mutar. We're worried about here is yayin nesech. If they have time to play around with the wine, to deal with the wine, then we assume any barrel that was open that they did that. They were menasech the yayin. Anything that's still sealed, they couldn't be menasech because it was sealed. On the other hand, if they're under pressure, bishat milchama, they're coming in a hurry and they don't have time to play around, make decisions, then we assume elu ve'elu mutarot. They both are considered to be mutar, the fi, she'en lehem p'nai lenasech. They don't have any free time. They're under pressure. They're rushing. They're in the heat of battle. In the heat of the battle, they're running through. They're grabbing some wine to drink. They're not going to have time to be menasech. Never we assume everything is okay. Alma, kevin de bi'ite lo atin in tzuche. Since they're under pressure, they're fearful, they will not be menasech the yayin. Hochanami, also over here, the reason Rabbi Yehuda was not problematic is because kevin de bi'ite lo atin lehurri. We assume that they can't have the two emotions simultaneously. Can't have the emotion of fear along with the emotion of hirhurim, improper thoughts, or these stimulative thoughts. And therefore, when he held his aver, we're not going to worry about the fact that it possibly could cause stimulation. Question is, what was he fearful of? Why did he have fear here? What's the fear? We understand when the battle is going on, the heat of the battle, we understand why they're fearful. But why is Rabbi Yehuda fearful over here? Somebody gives a number of possibilities. He was afraid. It was nighttime, and it was high up. So he was afraid of heights at night, and that he might fall off the roof. So that was enough of a fear. His Rebbe is standing there. So a certain amount of relationship between a student and a Rebbe, there's fear there. That fear will also impact his emotions. Some say that it was the fear of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the presence of the Shekhinah, because they were standing on top of a Beit Knesset. And the Shekhinah is showing the Beit Knesset, so he was fearful because of that sense of the presence of the Shekhinah. And some say that was the general nature of Rabbi Yehuda. He was Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, and he always felt the presence of Hashem that was there, and he was always fearful, because Kari Shmuel Alei, Shmuel called about Rabbi Yehuda, En Zeh Yilodisha. He's not a human being. He's like a malach. He has that tremendous sense of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence in the world, and that he has that fear all the time, and therefore he will not come to Hirohurim. So this is an exceptional case. Now, how exceptional the case is, one is particular to the Beit Knesset, the Shekhinah that's found in the Beit Knesset. Yeah, but he sensed it because of the location. In another place, he wouldn't have had that sensation, whereas the other one is a continuous feeling of the presence of the Shekhinah. And that also has an afkamina in terms of how applicable is it to someone else. Is this exceptional case because Rabbi Yehuda is an exceptional person, and this is unique to Rabbi Yehuda? Or is this an exceptional case because of fears that other people could also have? If they have those same fears, then we'd also apply to them the same rules that were mentioned here by Rabbi Yehuda. Vibai Dema, another possibility here is Nasui Avo, that he was married. Damar of Nachman and Maya Nasui Mutar. It comes from someone who's married, then we don't worry about it because they have an outlet for the Hirurim. And since they have an outlet, then we don't worry about the fact that they might become somewhat stimulated. Or they're less sensitive to it because they are married. Vibai Dema, Kiha Urile. That this is what he paskin for him. Detani Abba Breit Ravimi Binyamin Barchia. Aval Masayib Beitzim Milamato. Enochanami, that you cannot hold the aver in order to urinate, but one can use or hold on to the scrotum below and use that to elevate the aver, because that's not stimulative in nature. And so there is a way to do that. Vibai Dema, Kiha Urile. Or this possibility is what Shmuel instructed him. Damar Rabbi Bo, Rabbi Yochanan, Gvul Yeshlo Miatara Ulamata Mutar, Miatara Ulamalo Asur. That also, even on the Aver itself, there are different locations along the Aver which are able to be stimulated more or less. And that is a deal with the Gvul, or the borderline, is the crown. Crown of the Aver, the part where we do the Brit Milah, we peel away the Orla. That part in the front is not stimulated easily. And therefore one can hold that part of it, the atara, ulamata. Lamata means what's facing downward towards the earth. So lamata means the end of the aver, towards the tip of the aver. Over there would be mutar to hold on to it, because that will not be stimulative in nature. Whereas from the atara back towards the body, that's what it means, namala, towards the body, that would be problematic. So these are another two solutions to the problem, which is that Shmuel's instructions to him about how to hold his aver relied on one of these two memrot, that there are ways to do it without causing a problem. All right, Amarav, Amikasheh Atzmo L'dat, someone who caused himself to have an erection intentionally, Yehebi Nidui. So put into excommunication. V'leima Asur. Why don't you say Asur? Why do you have to say B'Nidui? D'Megare Yitzara Nafshei. If he says it's Asur, then when you know something's Asur, it already, it causes the Yitzara to build up within the individual. When we feel something is out of reach, that a person starts to wonder about it, think about it, and it causes that problem to arise, even though the person knows that it's asur. To say, hey, b'nidui, it's a different type of expression that doesn't cause the yitzhara to be stimulated in this case. Rabbi Ami Amar, nikra varyan. It's called a sinner. Shikach umnatosh yitzhara. This is the work of the yitzhara. Hayom omer lo aseh kach. It says, today do this. L'machar omer lo aseh kach. And the next day says, does this. Yitzhara works in incremental basis. He never does it all at once, because he knows you can't conquer a person in one shot. The only way to conquer a person is to slowly eat away at them, work away at them, chip away at them. And so that would possibly offer an alternative explanation of what Lema Asur de Megare the Yitzhara Nafshei means, that here a person is putting themselves into the hands of the Yitzhara. So if we're saying over here, the problem is once you've entered the hands of the Yitzhara, he can build on that and get you to the point where you do something much worse. So here, a person is mekashel atzmo l'dat, putting himself in such a position where he's putting himself in the hands of the Yitzhara, and by doing that, he will lead himself down a path that could lead to, quote unquote, avodah zarah, greater and greater avirot. And that's why he says, yehi b'nidui. Yehi b'nidui is a very strong lashon. He should be excommunicated. He has to put a stop to this right away. You can't just say it's asur. Anybody who brings themselves to the point of having improper thoughts is not allowed into the mechitza of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, is not allowed into the area where the Shekhinah resides. Ketiv Ha'acha says, Vayirav Eini Hashem, again the same pasuk that we're quoting about the children of Yehuda, just talking about improper thoughts, but they're also Shekh Vatzer Levatalach. Ketiv Ha'atam, and it's written in Tehillim, Kiglo Kel Chafetz Resha Ata, that you are not a God who wants evil. Lo Yigurcha Ra. So the understanding means, Lo Yigurcha Ra means that those that are classified as Ra will not be allowed to dwell amongst you or with you. And that is Bayera, we're quoting the Pasuk from Breshit Lamed Chet, by the children of Yehuda, that they did evil. That what they did was called evil, which had to do that they were being shufech shichvat zer lo batala. If you look at the sorts of shots, he enters in Amar Abelazar over here. There's an additional line which I explained already in the Pasuk, but it says, Vamar Belazar, my lo yigur chara, what does it mean? That will not dwelt amongst the bad, lo yagur bimigur chara, that they, those that are evil will not be allowed to live with you in your dwelling place. So instead of reading it that they, you will not dwell amongst the evil, we're adding in the word that evil will not dwell where you dwell. Vamar Rabbi Lazar, now there's an additional member of Rabbi Lazar, by dechtiv yedechem damim leyu, that your hands are covered in blood. This is from the Haftorah that we read by Shabbat Chazon. It says your hands are full of blood. Over there, they're obviously referring to both murder and to the mistreatment of those that are less fortunate in society. But here, Rabbi Lazar makes it a play. Elu amnafim biyad. These are people who, they're masturbating with their hand, and therefore, yedechem is a play, damim meleyu. It's as if they were spilling blood. So that's what we've seen before, that those that do, that it sins, that they spilling of blood is associated with shechvat zer lebatala. Right. Exactly. Tanit be Rabbi Shmuel, we have a similar limud from Rabbi Shmuel, told tinaf, lo deh bechaniyuf, ben berad, ben beyad, ben berego. So tinaf is not, do not adulter, but also, do not have any sense of niyuf, whether it's by hand, whether it's by foot, meaning do not have anything that stimulates or causes the spilling of shechvat zer lebatala. So the isur is broader than simply adultery with a married woman. Tan Rabbanan, hagirim, v'mesachakim betinokot, that these two people or classes of people cause a delay in the coming of the Mashiach. Gerim, converts, and misafakim b'ktinokot. The Gemara says, Bishlam gerim. Gerim, I understand, kid Rabbi Chelbo. Damer Rabbi Chelbo, kashim gerim l'Yisrael kesapachat. The gerim are difficult to Yisrael kesapachat here. Here the sapachat is a play on words. Sapach, we know, means an addition, extra, add-on. The appendix is called the sapach. But it's also one of the names of, by the tzarat, is the sapachat. So the sapachat is here, is considered to be, they're an appendage to Bnei Israel. And as an appendage to Bnei Israel, they have a negative side to them. Rashi explains why. Rashi says, she'em bikim b'mitzvot, u'mevim paranot. They come and they're not experts at mitzvot, and then they cause paranot because they're not well versed in what they're supposed to be doing. That's one. Ve'od, shema le'medim li'yisrael mimaseyem. Bnei Israel will learn from them. They come from different cultures, different society, and they'll bring in some of their evil ways, and Bnei Israel will learn from them. It's Mipi Maria Zakein. That Rashi quotes from his Rebbe. Then Yesh Omer, Shukol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh. Shaloni Tarbu Bishvil Geirim. And that Bnei Israel were Arevim Zebazeh. And then Rashi says, V'la Miltahi. That's not a problem. Shaloni Tarbu Bishvil Geirim. Geirim are not included in Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh. As a Rashi says, and he rejects that explanation because they're not included. Tosafot says, I don't understand, that is not correct at all. He says that anybody who joins Klal Yisrael has a din of Arevim Zelazeh. And therefore the Rimefaresh, the Ficha Kashim, Shemitma'im B'Yisrael. They get mixed up in the bloodlines of Israel. And he quotes in the Gemara in Kiddushin about Asura Yuchsin, that Shechina is only Shara on families that are miyuchasim. Geirim are not classified or are considered to be miyuchasim, and therefore it causes the Shechina not to be Shara in Klal Yisrael. What you're noting here is that a very different view from the Gemara than from the Torah. The Torah says, Va'avtem et ger, and here the Gemara has a very negative view of the ger. One way to deal with that is to say, when the Torah talks about a ger, it's not necessarily talking about a convert. A ger, in the terms of the Torah, the Tanakh, is a stranger, someone who does not come from this land, someone who doesn't belong here. So we have interpreted a ger to be a convert, who's also someone who doesn't belong. But the Torah's din, or the din of a ger, might be something much broader, which is that they are anybody who is out of place, that you shouldn't take advantage or you shouldn't mistreat them because they are different or out of place. And that could have broader meaning than just a pure convert or a ger. But obviously there is it's a double-edged sword in terms of gerim, that gerim are unbelievable people. On the other hand, they do bring with them a certain amount of baggage. And that comes up also in the machloket that we saw in the Gemara in Baba Batra with regards to whether a ger is allowed to say avotenu. Whether a ger is allowed to make certain comments about their past where they have forefathers like we do, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And there's always the beautiful, the Tshuvas HaRambam that talks about, in that context, he speaks about gerim in a very, very positive light, beyond what's the normal. The ger should be viewed in such a positive light. Also then, Kiddushin says that gerim are negative because, similar to the story of Yonah, By the story of Yonah, why does Yonah not want to go to Nineveh? Because he knows they're going to do tshuva, and that's going to cause problems with Bnei Yisrael, because it'll, in contrast, in comparison to Bnei Yisrael, it'll shed a very negative light on Bnei Yisrael. And so too, Gerim who come, or Geri Emet, come in and they practice things in so much more of a proper way, that will cause a negative light to be shone on Bnei Yisrael. That's what Tosfot says in Kiddushin. I think you could have both of them be true. And that's what you just mentioned. There's a difference between maybe Geri Emet and Gerim that are convert, not for the right reason. That's what Rashi quotes over here with regards to Gerim. He says Eruv Rav. Talks about the Eruv Rav. I believe there are some questions about their motivations in terms of their Gerut, and you could really separate between those two items. Elam is Sakikim Betin Okma. What is this playing around with children? He. Either Mishkav Zachar, if you're talking about homosexuality, Bnei Skila Ninu. What do you mean that they're holding up Mashiach? They're not just holding up Mashiach, they're deserving a death penalty. Ella Derech Evarim, Bnei Mabul Ninu. What do you say, that they are not having sexual intercourse as homosexuals, but they're causing stimulation or the spilling of Sheikh Vadzera? That we already saw from Rabbi Eliezer, that that's their Mabul, Bnei Mabul Ninu. They're deserving of a flood. Ella Dinesivek Tanot. They're marrying women that are minors, because they're unable to give birth. The individual, the man, has already reached the age where he could inseminate a woman, and he's marrying a woman who is not of that age, and therefore it's all going to waste. So they're causing, why they're causing a delay in the becoming of Mashiach? That Mashiach doesn't come until all the neshamot that are kept in this location in Shemaim called Guf are used up. So there is this idea that there Hashem has a certain amount of neshamot that have to be born, and by delaying that, or by causing that not to happen, you are delaying the Mashiach. Shneamar, Kiruach milafanai yatof, neshamot ani asiti. There's a wind that goes out from before me, and yatof, over here, they're considered to be some sort of a holding pen, and neshamot ani asiti, and I placed all the neshamot that I made into this holding plan that is yatof that wraps them up, and they'll be born. Tosafot asks a very interesting question. He takes this so literally. He asks from the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos says that if Ilmalei Bnei Yisrael Shemru Shtei Shabbatot, Bnei Yisrael would keep two Shabbatot in a row, the Mashiach would come immediately. Tosafot says, well, what happens here? What about all these Mishavot? Tosafot's answer is very interesting. He says they'll have multiple births. That the birth rate will increase, keep two Shabbatot. The birth rate will increase like they had in Mitzrayim, Shisha B'keres Echad, have six tuplets, and they'll take care of the problem very quickly. It's very interesting, Tosafot. Banashim tikat seitz. If a man, we say, cut off his hand. Ibailo the dina tanan, or the tuta tanan. How literally do we take that? Do we mean literally you cut off his hand? Or the tuta tanan, we say that it should be that his hand should be cut off, but cursing that person. Which one is it? So when it says, dina tanan, kihada ravuna. It's literally like ravuna. Kihada ravuna, ravuna is talking about a case in Sanhedrin. That says, kol emrim yadol chaviro tikat seitz. If you hold up your hand to hit your friend, it should be cut off. And over there, Rav Huna says, katz yado, literally, that you should cut the hand off. So that's the Gemara says here. Where do we say? Is it a literal taking or a curse? Dina tanan, do we say it's literal kiyad Rav Huna, like to say to the kids of Rav Huna that katz yado? Oh, latuta tanan. Or do we say, no, that it's really a curse? Tashma, tani, Rabbi Tavun, omer yad li ama, person who moves his hand towards his aver, ti katzeitz yado al tiburo. You cut off his hand right on his stomach. Amrulo, below kreso nivkat. Cut up his hand right there. You're going to split open his stomach. Amlen mutav tibaka kreso. I read the bear shachat. Better that you split his stomach open than he ends up putting himself in Gehenim. So here, my bishlam adina tnan. If you say, okay, we're taking it literally that you cut his hand off, and with Amrei, that's what he responded, lo kreso nivkat. They respond to him and say, wait, aren't you going to split his stomach open? And he responds, yes, that's fine. If you say it's a curse, my kreso nivkat. What are they asking about this? Oh, is his stomach's going to burst open? It's not literal. It's a curse. Elamai dinotznan. What are you going to suggest? It's literal. Lo sagi delav al tiburo. Then why does his hand have to be on his stomach? Meaning that if you're cutting his hand off, why does it have to be sitting on his stomach? What does the stomach have anything to do with this? Elo hachi kamai rabbi tarvom. Is that you're explaining the brayta incorrectly? Kol machnis yadol matam b'tiburo tikatzeitz. We will take it literally, that you split it open. But what's the threshold beyond which a person should not have his hand go down? That is, he should not go below his belly button. Belly button is the threshold beyond which a person should not have his hand go down. And that's what it means, tikatzeitz, cut it off at that point in time. His hand should be cut off because he moved it below the tiburo. But we still might read it as being literal. Literal that you cut it off. And why is tiburo significant over here is because that's the threshold by where we were going to cut off his hand. Samalo the Rabbi Tarfon, Yeshev lo kotz b'keso, exactly what you just said. It's got a little splinter in his stomach, lo yitzvenu. You can't take it out, like you were saying, can't scratch his knee. Amalan, lo, no. Volo kreso nivkat. Isn't his stomach gonna burst open? Amalan, mutav tibgat kreso, we already had the bershachat. Better to allow that to happen than to put himself in a position where it's gonna cause himself geinom. That is a rereading of the Braita to say that the threshold is the stomach, and then that question about splitting open his stomach wasn't literally about cutting his hand off, but rather about the fact that there might be something there that was causing him to have pain or could cause damage to his stomach. And he says, better to allow that damage to go on than to allow one's hand to go below their belly button. But originally, it sounded like a man literally cut off, and then they reread the story about the kreso to make it in such a way that it doesn't have to be literal anymore. So therefore, the Gemara is left indecisive about whether it's a curse or literal over here. Next Mishnah, a Mishnah that we had mentioned when we learned earlier in the Masechta about this issue, which is Achareshet, Vashuta, Vasuma, Vashnitrafa Data. If these four women, all of which they are incapacitated in some way, it's a deaf woman, a woman who has lost her mind, a blind woman, or so a person who cannot work with their full capacities. Yesh lehem pikachot. If there's someone who is of sound mind with them, mitaknotan, they can take care of them. And therefore they are vehen ochlot v'truma. They can eat truma because someone else is always looking, checking them and taking them to the mikveh, making sure that they're torim. But they themselves cannot do that. Gemara says, chereshet, itiv dakna nefsha. What's the problem with a chereshet? She can check herself. Why is a chereshet, just because she can't hear, what is about being deaf that prevents a person from checking in terms of being a nida? Zetani, Amar Rabbi, chereshet hayta b'shchunoteinu. Rabbi says, we had this deaf woman in our neighborhood. L'daya shebudeka b'atzma. It's not enough that she took care of herself. El shechavrote ra'ot umarotla. She was the person he brought marot to. She was an expert in dinei dam nido. Sahatam bimidaberet veino shomat. That's what we know throughout Shas. That's what we're talking about, a woman who can speak, but she's deaf, not dumb. She's able to speak, but not hear. Hocha, our case in the Mishnahs, v'sheinu midaberet veino shomat. This case where she's both deaf and dumb. So, Kedetnan, we have a Mishnah, cheresh shedibru chachamim b'chol makom, that a cheresh that the Torah, but we speak about cheresh shoteh v'katan, that is mentioned everywhere throughout Shas, that's referring to enu shomeo v'enu midaber. Someone who doesn't hear and doesn't speak. And their Chubot Rinne, including Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, writes today that it was clear in their day, if you didn't speak and you didn't hear, you were the equivalent of a Shotah, because there was no way for you to accumulate information and there was no way for you to communicate. Today, where we have sign language and we have other ways of communication and the ability to be taught and educated, that it might very well be that today their status has changed. And this is really an association in the time of the Gemara. You see that Cheresh Shoteh v'Katan. They see Cheresh in the same getters as Shoteh because they were unable to be educated. And today we might, obviously, there are many people who could be educated even if they are both deaf and dumb.
It's very interesting that she was
No, there's nothing wrong with it. You have to also distinguish over here. Generally, what it means is that it doesn't need achra. If things are obvious in color, she's allowed to, but to give psach, which is achra, that she's not allowed to do. That's a distinction between what a woman can do versus what's left in the hands of a Rav, which is Rav can provide a Chra, a woman, and even a woman herself, her own. I mean, if she knows the colors and it's clear what the color is, then there's no question. And therefore, that's what they use today. These women who are Yoatzot or Tohanot, they go to them with damim. If it's obvious what the color of the dam is, then she can just say, this is not a problem, this is a problem. If it requires a Chra, then they have to take it to a Rav. Right, so now, Gemara says, Hasuma, one who's blind, why can't she check herself? She'll check herself and show it to her friend. Don't include Suma in the Mishnah. That's not right. It shouldn't be included there. Right, if she's on her own, then obviously there's a problem.
She needs someone else.
The prime point is that she can check. She's reliable to check. She can't do the sighting of the bdikot, and that's all. She needs someone to help her with that. She lost her mind. What's the difference between Shota and Nifra Data? So the Gemara says, Shnitifra Data Machmat Choli. Shota seems to be something that was congenital, whereas Nifra Data is when she lost her mind because of sickness later on. Then Rabbanan, Kwein Shote Matbilinoto Machilinoto Chuma. Kwein, who is not of sound mind, you put him in the mikveh, and then you can allow him to eat truma, the truma erev. When you have erev shemesh, he can eat truma because then he's no longer tamei. Umishamrim oto shlo yishan. Make sure that he doesn't go to sleep. Yashan, if he did sleep, yashan tamei. If he sleeps, he's tamei. Lo yashan tor. If he doesn't sleep, then he's tor. Why? Because we're afraid that he had a seminal mission. And we can't tell because he is a shoteh. So the assumption is as long as you keep him awake, he's not having any seminal mission. And therefore, if you take him to the mikveh and has Erev Shemesh, he's tohar. As soon as you let him sleep, then we're back to square one, you gotta start over again. You make him a pouch around his aver, so that you can check. If he had a seminal mission, you'll be able to look in the pouch and see if he had it. That's not a good idea, because that's going to cause stimulation, and that's going to cause more problems. You're going to even increase the likelihood that he's a shikvat zerah. According to you, the shoteh never has any solution to the problem. We do have a solution. As long as he doesn't go to sleep, he's fine. So you take him to the mikveh, comes nightfall, so therefore he can eat. If he sleeps, then he's going to have a problem. But according to you, maybe have a smaller mission, and we absorbed into the leather. I mean, leather is porous, and therefore it's not clear that you can see everything that's in there. If he has a larger mission, yes. If he has a smaller mission, you're not going to find it. So Tana Mishum Rabbi Elazar Amru Osim Lekos Kis Shel Metechet. No, you don't use a leather pouch, but rather use a metallic pouch. From Rabbi Yishon Nechoshet, use copper. Kedetanya, how does he know you should use copper? Because of what we have, which is actually a Mishnah in Parah and a Tosefta. The Rabbi Yudah Amir Roin Oton Givolim Shel Azov Gilein Shel Nechoshet. Talking about there's a machloket which we mentioned earlier in our Masechta about whether you need a shi'ur for the sprinkling of the waters, the made nida, the waters of paraduma. The ashes that are in the water, how much is the shi'ur that you need to sprinkle? So over there, there's a machloket about what's called the gibalim. The gibalim are the hyssop that you use to sprinkle it with, the ezov that you use to sprinkle it with. That ezov is absorbent. So if you dip them into the water, they're going to absorb the water and you still won't be able to sprinkle. So do you have to account for the fact that they absorb the water, and that means you'll need much more water and ashes to do the sprinkling than if you just say that it's the amount that you need to sprinkle. So over there, Rabbi Yehuda says that we look at the givolim, the tops of the hyssop, we look at them as if they're metallic, and they do not absorb. What type of metal? We're talking about there? Nechoshet. So from that, Abai says, nechoshet is not absorbent, it's not porous, and therefore you should use a copper pouch. Very comfortable. Correct. Amar Papa, Shmamina, Michnesayim Asurim. So Rabbi Papa says from this that it must be that briefs are Asur. Vachti, what do you mean they're Asur? Vaseh lahem Michnesay Bad Chasod Beserva. The Kohanim wore Michnesayim. They wore briefs. So how could it tell you? No, theirs were different. Michnesay Kohanim, Lamahim Domim. Their pants were more like Kimin Pamalnaya Shel Prashim. They were like the shorts, like boxers, of the Prashim. Can either here mean Prushim or Prashim. Those are the cavalry riders. Lamalad Madnaim, they go up on the top until the loins. Lamat Adre Chaim, they go down to the Yerech, until the thighs. They're not just briefs, they are almost pants, or knickers of a sort. V'yesh Lahem Shnatzim, and they have ties on them. They have a way to tie them, I think strings to tie them. They do not have, now one interpretation which would be the easier way to read it is they did not have a place for urinating or for defecating. In that they were whole pants. In order to urinate or defecate, you'd have to lower the pants entirely. They did not have a zipper or a button, as Rashi says over here, that you could use. That's one interpretation. The other interpretation is, Rashi says that around the Beit Erva, around the Beit Erva, they were loose. They were not tight-fitting around the aver, and they were not tight-fitting around the rear of the individual in order that they would not become meluchlach in the back, and in the front they would not cause stimulation. So the michnasayim that we're talking about with the Kohanim are very unique types of michnasayim, and therefore they do not go under this category of that michnasayim are asurim. Okay, we'll stop over here.